how many kids are going to admit that, you know what, I used $100 instead of $20, and they're going to say it's my mistake. They're going to immediately say, no, the gaming company scammed. I was never involved. That was not my intent.
How much money are you losing in your games to fraud? Hello and welcome to Growth Masterminds. My name is John Kutzer. We've talked before about ad fraud on Growth Masterminds, but we haven't chatted about fraud in your apps or your games, purchases that aren't legit, stolen cards used to buy digital goods, and much more, and all the challenges that you have when those things happen. So we're going to chat about friendly fraud, true fraud, family fraud. Our guest today is Suresh Dakshina. He's the co-founder and strategist at Chargeback Gurus. Welcome, Suresh.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to be here.
Wonderful to have you. Let's get us started with the big picture. How big is the problem here?
Well, if you look at it, the fraud challenge, it's growing in billions every year. You know, even though there are a lot of solutions out there to minimize the impact of fraud, the problems seem to grow. It's because the number of e-commerce transactions happening online is enormous. It's growing every year. So the problem is also proportionately increasing.
Interesting. E-commerce as well as in-app purchases, correct?
Yep. In-app purchases are also called e-commerce because they are made online or through an app purchase. So they are still considered online. We call it as card not present. You know, the customer is not physically present to engage in a transaction. So they're doing it through the mobile device. They're doing it online. So we call them as card not present transaction. And the problem of disputes and fraud, they continue to grow.
Excellent. What kinds of fraud are we talking about here?
Well, there are three kinds of fraud that happens. One, we call it as the true fraud, which is we call it as the third-party fraud, where you are the actual card holder, but your identity was taken for a ride and somebody, you know, placed an order or they used it for gaming and you never knew. So we call that as actually a third-party fraud. The second one, we call it as friendly fraud. I mean, the name is deceptive. But
which fraud is
exactly
friendly?
So that's actually called first party fraud. So this is the actual cardholder who's actually engaging in a transaction and they have a malicious intent of defrauding the merchant who's offering the gaming service. Sometimes actually it's not the actual cardholder who is at fault. It could be their family members. I mean, we have kids who take our card and then they use it for gaming. They never tell us. So the actual cardholder thinks I never did, but it's actually their family member is doing. So we still categorize those kind of actually attempts as first-party fraud. And the third one is the merchant error fraud. These are the merchants who are having a deliberate intent, false marketing practices, false ways of actually, you know, automatically charging the customer without letting them know. So these are the type of fraud that's been committed by the merchant itself. So those are the three general category we have when it comes to fraud types.
Talk about the second one a little bit. What's going on there when it's my card, it's my account, I'm doing it. I want something in the game or in the app, but I don't want to pay for it. What kinds of fraud are we talking about here? Are we looking for like cheat codes? Are we looking for coupon codes online or that have been shared? What's going on here?
When it comes to gaming, the primary reason why, you know, fraud happens is we call it as family fraud, meaning your kids or your family members use the card and they never actually notified the cardholder, the actual cardholder, the primary cardholder. And then, you know, they engage in a gaming and they realize that instead of $10, the card was charged $50. They're scared to tell the cardholder. And then, you know, that when the real cardholder sees the statement, they think they never did and they file a dispute. I mean, how many kids are going to admit that, you know what, I used $100 instead of $20? And they're going to say, it's my mistake. They're going to immediately say, no, the gaming company scammed. I was never involved. That was not my intent. So they're going to put the blame on the gaming company and the cardholders are going to file a dispute. So that's a primary reason I have seen. And the second reason that I have seen, which is dominantly happening in the gaming industry, is buyer's remorse. You know, I'm playing the game. I'm playing the online casino. I'm addicted, right? I mean, it's like you going to Vegas. How many times we had the remorse when I come out of casinos, like, golly, I should have never played that. I should have walked away when I made the money. But it's very addictive, right? When it comes to online, you have a way to actually recoup your money where you can actually play the game and you realized you lost everything. Now you can call your credit card company and say, I never played this. You know, this was not me. So your actually way of recouping the money is much easier than playing the physical game at the physical location. So a lot of people actually, due to buyer's remorse, they actually commit, you know, first party fraud.
So this is super interesting for me personally, because I have a personal experience mm-hmm. that I want to share with you, and talk to me about how that works and what happens in that process. So there's one particular game that I like playing that I play a lot. I probably spent maybe $400, $500 mm-hmm. in the game over the course of a year and a half or so. And then I recently bought something about, I wouldn't say a month mm-hmm. ago, and I thought I was getting X, let's say, and I actually got Y. Mm. And Y was a fraction of the value of X. I'm talking like 1/100th mm-hmm. or maybe 5% at mm-hmm. most. And so what I actually did is, for the first time, I went on Apple's website, how to, you know, challenge or whatever, how to, you mm-hmm. know, and you fill out a little, it's a very minimal bit of information. You can't even really give any context as to why, mm-hmm. and you just dispute the charge in some way, shape, mm-hmm. or form. I don't even know what Apple's done with mm-hmm. that yet. Talk to me about that process.
Excellent. So the way it works is, the burden of proof always falls on the merchant who's delivering the service to you. They have to provide all the evidence that John was the actual player who played. He was well aware of the terms. He was well aware of the amount that was billed to his credit card. So they have to prove their innocence. You as a cardholder can say anything.
Assume guilty. Assume
exactly.
Guilty.
They are assumed guilty until proven innocent. So you as a cardholder, because of the Fair Credit Billing Act, which was established earlier in 1947, where they were told the consumer have the rights to file a dispute for any reason. Whether it is a legit reason or not a legit reason, it doesn't matter. That is up to the merchant to prove that it's legit or not legit. So you as the consumer have the easy way of just letting them know you want to file a dispute, you never engaged, and then leave it up to the merchant. And the problem comes in is, not a lot of merchants are well aware of these regulations, guidelines, and what they need to produce. Sometimes they think, I'm going to just send a copy of the invoice and that's good enough. That is not good enough. You know, you need to prove that John was well aware prior to putting his credit card details and processing the transaction that this is what he's going to get. So you sending just the invoice is not going to help you. So a lot of merchants, by default, either they lose the case or they actually write it off as a cost of doing business. They don't even want to get involved.
Yeah. I mean, this particular case was literally $14. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, there's probably zero ROI in fighting that.
Absolutely.
Case, right.
Absolutely. And that's why they rely on
negative ROI.
That's why they rely on companies like Charged by Gurus, where we have automated the process. Even though it's $14, there is actually a legal repercussion that can happen, where if you do not mm-hmm. fight the case, and if the credit card company is looking at you as a merchant and they see that you're never fighting those cases and you're constantly calling it as bad debt, they think the merchant is at fault, and that can actually help, that can actually work against you, because in the future, when you try to process a transaction, they will decline it because you're a notorious merchant and they don't want to deal with you.
Interesting. So if you don't fight, you're presumed guilty.
You're presumed guilty, and that can also affect your future transaction.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we talked in the pre-show about this is more prevalent in games than mm-hmm. in other kinds of apps. Why is that?
Excellent question. So if you look at the gaming industry, right? A gaming industry, you have millions of users. If the game is very attractive, let's talk about popular games, right? When there's a popular game launched, millions of users come in, and it is very challenging for companies to have friction in order to do verification or clarify who you are. They let anonymous accounts created, because that's a part of the gaming industry. They want to protect your identity, and they say, you know what, we understand your wife, your girlfriend might not be happy, so we let you create anonymous accounts and then you can go play however you want. Fraudsters know this, and this is a perfect breeding ground for them to commit fraud. I can go buy credit cards online. I can actually give you $100 and I can go to the black market and I can get about like 100 cards, and I can do testing in the gaming sites. I can do microtransactions for $1 and see if the cards are working and if they have funds. So fraudsters go there just to test the cards, because there is a lot of anonymous users. They don't check, they don't create friction, and it's easy for them to keep testing the cards automatically.
Super interesting. By the way, while you were answering that, I went to reportaproblem.apple.com. Mm-hmm. And there's a little link there, check status of claims. And I saw that I had a claim from May 17. Uh-huh. I was refunded for this purchase. It was 100 clan gold, and the total value was $15.67. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea why or how or anything like that, but I did get that refund. And you know what? I didn't even lose the thing that I got in the game. Because I don't think they closed the loop.
The merchant would have said, you know what? I do not have the time to fight it. Let me not even respond to that. So they just let it go. And then by default, you get the credit. And, you know, quite a few consumers are very tech savvy. They understand the payments ecosystem and the gaps. And they play with it. They know how much to dispute, when to dispute. And, you know, the peaks, holiday seasons are a perfect timing, breeding ground. Summer is a perfect time for gaming because a lot of kids are at home. They can play the games, and you will see actually chargebacks and frauds spiking because fraudsters want to be at a place where there are a lot of users playing at the same time so that they can navigate the waters without any friction.
Okay, so we understand the problem. I think you've laid it out. What's the solution?
So one of the ways actually they can minimize is first they need to actually educate their audience about security. They need to let them know why it is important to have at least a 14-digit password. A lot of gaming companies, you can enter 1234 and then your account gets created. You know.
But aren't a lot of in-app purchases, I mean, just happens, right? So it goes on my Apple account or on your Google Play account or something. You don't even have to enter a password or anything like that.
But at the same time, actually, because they don't enable two-factor authentication, which is very, very important. A lot of young users, they don't want to do it. They just wanted to immediately log in and play so they can hack your account, you know, and they can easily take over your funds and they can sell the account in eBay.
Okay.
You know, if there is actually a new game coming in, automatically actually they can say, hey, I have a user account. It's loaded for $100. I'll give it to you for $80. And people are willing to buy it because it's just a game. It's not an asset, right? I'm just gaining in for the experience. So I verify, I get it for $80, I get the account, I play and I'm done. So that's why it's so popular. All these accounts are being sold online, you know, that you can actually easily get access for a lesser price and you can play and you can move on with it. And, you know.
Well, step one is educating your customers, your users. What else is part of the solution?
Part of the solution is also code review, because what we have seen is the codes are very vulnerable. They have to do regular audits to ensure there are no bugs in your code. There is no actually malicious, you know, code there that can automatically scan who's using your games, etc. Because they can hack millions and millions of accounts, and they can instantly sell that in eBay and other marketplace and make money. Oftentimes, you see when there is an attack happening on a large volume, it's because there is a bug in the code and they never fixed it.
Is that also potentially a malicious SDK?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We have seen actually insiders, developers who develop the game. If you look at a lot of these games, right, they have these young developers who don't follow proper security protocol. They just wanted to create, create the code, and then they wanted to push it to production. They don't go through security compliance, security audits regularly. We request gaming companies to do at least a quarterly audit of their code and vulnerability scanning and penetration testing just to make sure that your codes are safe and you fix the bugs. There are softwares out there. You don't need to go through a pain-free process. There are softwares which can help you. It's just that the gaming companies, I always tell them, think of security as a need. It is not a want, it's a need for you.
Exactly. Most people think of it as a cost, a burden, a slowdown, a hassle. And after we build, then we'll have to go come back and do
security.
You
have a moral responsibility. Okay, you know, I'm giving my card. I'm trusting you. It's your responsibility to protect my asset, protect my account and my card. You cannot just let it expose.
Yeah. Cool. You're educating your customer. You're educating yourself and doing some code review. And what else are you doing?
And also another thing that I would do is actually there are softwares which can find out which gamings are popularly sold in eBay. There are softwares which can automatically tell you. And it can tell you, hey, you know what? There is a user called John K. The account is being sold in eBay. You can have this.
You're outing me.
Your account is sold. John K. is available. At least notify John K. that, John, your account is being sold in eBay. Would you like to actually know that if it is you or if it is not you, then go ahead and change your account. So you can smart way of actually notifying your users that you are also taking interest in protecting their, you know, identity, you can do that. So they need to know what all the software is available that can protect the security and make it easier. I mean, I understand when it comes to gaming, they all think about no friction, meaning they want the user to sit in the chair and keep playing. And even if the card has to be loaded, they don't even know your card is being built because it happens in the back end. The more you keep playing the game, the card gets built. And they think about frictionless way of actually loading your card and playing because they don't want the users to walk away. But sometimes actually there is a fine line you got to draw, you know?
Yep. Super interesting. Okay. So let's say you've done all those things. You're still getting significant chargebacks. You're still getting significant fraud. What do you do?
You know, I first try to eliminate the third-party fraud because that's within the control of the gaming company. You have the moral responsibility. Then what we do is actually, if you still see first-party fraud happening, right, you cannot have I cannot predict somebody's emotion. And somebody's coming to my site and they're placing the order with their actual identity. I don't know if they have a malicious intent to, you know, commit fraud. So one way of doing it is fighting the dispute. You know, you have to let the bank know that I've delivered my service. Here is the identity information I have about this person. And here is what actually I'm going to tell you that we delivered the service. Now, companies sometimes do not have the time to investigate, know what to do, what not to do. And that's why they hire companies like Chargeback Gurus, where we specialize in identifying patterns. For example, if I know Mr. X is using different credit card, he's coming through a different identity, our software can detect and it can tell the gaming company, it might be in your best interest to block Mr. X because he's a repeat offender. We can block them from happening. And then if I know a customer coming once or twice and they're filing a dispute, we automatically gather all the evidence, present the right way so that we can help the merchant get the money back. So we have a way of doing that automatically and merchants don't have to go through the painful process of solving this.
Interesting. Okay. Very, very cool. Well, thank you so much. This was an area that I had personal interest in just because I recently disputed a charge and also because I haven't looked at in-app fraud this way before. Thank you so much for taking
the time. Absolutely, John. It's a pleasure actually, you know, being on the podcast with you and, you know, looking forward to actually, you know, viewing the podcast.